אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
Now we're joined by Peter Khalil, member for Wills and Australia's first special envoy for social cohesion, sharing insights into his role fostering social harmony in the backdrop of increased Islamophobia and anti-Semitism.
I was asked, obviously, when I was first appointed by members of the community, what actually is social cohesion. And the way I describe it is that social cohesion is really about how we interact with each other in society as individuals, as members of groups, organizations, communities. And the manner in which we do that in a way where even if there is disagreement or differences, we can navigate that difference peacefully and respectfully. And that is the essence of cohesion. Of course, the role is important because social cohesion in society is being challenged at a number of levels, and there's socioeconomic disadvantage, there is intergenerational unfairness, and these are genuine grievances that people have. People feel like they are disconnecting or don't belong. But of course, some of these genuine grievances are being manipulated by political populists who seek to use the grievances for their short-term gain by whipping up fear and anger and further division. And that kind of really challenges the cohesion because people are then unable to engage with each other peacefully and respectfully. And of course, there is the real problem of social media and media fragmentation, which exacerbates division in many respects by pushing people into pockets of difference, even different sets of realities as well. And, you know, there is a loud minority, maybe a minority of people who might think that violence is a legitimate form of political and ideological expression, and that is fundamentally antithetical to social cohesion because it is about people putting their ideological or political views and ahead of harmony in society and harmony with others, and imposing that on others through violence or hate speech or vilification. And that these are the challenges that we're facing. And of course, the role has involved advocacy on a number of policy areas and programs that can actually protect and enhance our relatively harmonious, multi-faith, multi-ethnic, multicultural society, which has been relatively successful.
Do you have any ability to influence policy in this role that you're in?
Absolutely. I work with the Minister for Home Affairs, the Prime Minister's Office, in advocating for various policy ideas and also programs. We've already announced over $90 million in social cohesion-related funding, and this is programs that help communities across our society with building up their resilience and protecting that harmony across the community. So there's a lot of work that has been done, and my role is to work in that space. The main parts too of what I've been tasked to do is ensuring that there's a nationally consistent approach between state and territory governments and federal governments as far as our policy and our programs, working with communities. And when I say communities, it's not just multicultural community leadership and stakeholders, it's grassroots, and it's also leadership in the business sector, the academia, in the not-for-profit sector, in the sporting sector, because all of these important institutions in our society have a responsibility to aid social cohesion, to aid the idea that we can navigate difference peacefully and to be able to work through our differences without the resort to violence. And they play an important role in that because they actually are places where people come together from different backgrounds as well. So there's a lot of engagement with those stakeholders, a lot of work in consultation with those community leaders across the sector. Then there's obviously the policy work that we're involved with the Department of Home Affairs and the Prime Minister's Department as well around the programs that we've delivered and hopefully deliver into the future.
According to the Islamophobia Register of Australia, Islamophobic incidents in Australia are reported to have increased by more than 600% since Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th. And anti-Semitic attacks have happened to the Australian Jewish community and then up by more than 700%, according to the Council of Australian Jewry. Is drawing a moral equivalence between both communities plausible?
I think it is not constructive to compare suffering. I think there is a shared humanity. And the problem here is that there has been a horrific and unacceptable increase in anti-Semitism, which, as you pointed out, statistically has been, you know, the highest level of anti-Semitic incidents, I think, in decades, certainly in living memory. And the Jewish Australian community are feeling very vulnerable, very exposed, very attacked for who they are. And we know that anti-Semitism is a vile, ancient scourge, which, you know, certainly has predates the attacks on the 7th of October, which were the most horrific attacks on the Jewish or Jews since the Holocaust, the highest number of individuals killed since the Holocaust in one fell swoop. Horrible and horrific massacre and terrorist massacre of innocent civilians. And so the scourge of anti-Semitism goes way back throughout, particularly Western history, in Western Europe, and throughout, you know, thousands of years of history. We know, your listeners probably know of that history, the pogroms in Europe leading up into the culmination of the worst aspect of humankind during the in the Holocaust, of what humans have done to other humans. And so the Jewish community is feeling now, particularly after a period of relative peace and harmony and stability, this unleashing of this vile ancient scourge again. And I guess the question in a lot of people's minds is this anti-Semitism something which has been always there? And I think it has been, but has it been widespread but only suppressed and then unleashed in the recent period? Or is this also a very loud and very violent minority of people who are unleashing this prejudice towards Jewish Australians? Whatever the answer, the effect on Jewish Australians is still the same. The fear, the anxiety, the vulnerability, and the uncertainty, given the period of relative stability that has existed in Australia. And likewise, you mentioned the increase in the Islamophobic attacks against Muslim Australians has also increased, and that is also unacceptable and vile. The point I want to make, though, is not to compare attacks on Muslims or Jews or Hindus or anyone of faith or anyone because of their gender and identity. All of it is unacceptable on two levels. As a legal point, it is illegal to attack someone based on their ethnic or faith identity or their gender or their sexuality. That's covered in hate crimes legislation, both at the federal and state level, as it should be. And that's a legal sanction. But I think the important point to make, Mariel, is that there is also a morally reprehensible element to these attacks. I think the vast majority of Australians completely reject the attacks on people based on their faith, whether it's a Jewish Australian or any other person of faith. And what we've seen in the statistics that you've just outlined is a significant increase in attacks on particular communities because of who they are. And that is unacceptable. This is what I go back to earlier, the hatred that has spread, the poison of the hatred, and the idea that one can express, a person should be able to express their political view or their political difference or their ideological difference by attacking someone through violence or hate speech. That poison has spread, and it's happening. And it is something that we are fighting, every one of us in government, and everyone in the community has to stand up and say that behavior is not only legally sanctioned and unacceptable, it is morally unacceptable. And I think one of the ways that community leaders, whether they be faith leaders, multicultural leaders, business leaders, academic leaders, and so on, is to have the courage to stand up and say, no, this is unacceptable, not just legally unacceptable, but morally. And the standards of behavior, the modeling of behavior, has to come from people in the community. Like, we as lawmakers, we can pass, and we have passed, new legislation on anti-doxing, which was being used against the Jewish Australians. We passed hate crimes legislation last year, hate symbols, and banned hate symbols and Nazi symbols. We've passed that. That's a legislative response to escalation of hatred. But that's the legal thing.
Which you're involved in, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the government has done that. But what I'm saying is, not only have we done that, we have to show the political leadership in saying no to the morally reprehensible acts of violence against community members or hate speech or vilification against them because of who they are. That is morally unacceptable. Other people in the community need to be also demonstrating that leadership by modeling behavior that says, so every time an individual, and I'm not talking about leadership now, every person in the community who reaches out their hand to another person of another faith that they may disagree with or they have a difference of worldview on, but actually has a dialogue in a peaceful and respectful way, is a modeled behavior which will cause a ripple effect and send the message clearly that this is the way to harmony, and this is the way to constructive cohesion in the community, not resorting to violence or hate or hate speech or vilification. But unfortunately, there's a small minority that are doing the latter, and that's where we are battling against right now.
But to your point about individuals having a positive ripple effect on society, would you agree that there's been a social cohesion breakdown at esteemed and respected institutions like some of our universities, where there's been anecdotes aplenty of students feeling intimidated by individuals who are meant to protect them? I'd imagine they'd have the very best of intentions and that they support free speech, but then where does it cross the line?
You're alluding to what is a really important point here, and it's a kind of a principle, which is that people have every individual and collective have a right to express themselves freely. There's freedom of expression in this country. People have a right to be critical of foreign policies. They have a right to express themselves through protest. It's a fundamental democratic right, and I'll always defend that fundamental democratic right, even and especially so when we may disagree, because it is a right to express oneself freely. The obligation of those in the democratic process who have that privilege of free speech and free ability to express themselves, the obligation on those people is to also do so in a peaceful way and a respectful way, and certainly within the law. And what we've seen is when that crosses over into acts of violence, attacks on community members, attacks on synagogues or attacks on places of worship, attacks on someone because of who they are, because they are somehow indirectly linked to a conflict overseas, that is unacceptable. It's a breach of your obligation as a citizen in the democracy. You get these freedoms and these rights in our democracy. We will defend those rights, even if we disagree vehemently. It's important to defend that. Your obligation then is also practice that right peacefully and respectfully, and not fall over the line into hate speech, vilification of someone, or even violence. And that's what we've seen on a number of occasions. As you said, in the rise in anti-Semitism, in Islamophobic incidents, in whatever it might be, that is unacceptable. And this is where I think the leadership across the society has to be really clear about.
Especially in public institutions. We've seen a lot of uptick with the law enforcement getting involved as well. Do you think that law enforcement is more reactive than preventative? I mean, how can you really police social cohesion?
Well, social cohesion is different than policing and law enforcement. Law enforcement, as I said earlier, is one aspect of the tools that government has to sanction behaviour by passing laws against hate crimes or hate symbols. Of course, law enforcement has a role to play to set the standard on that, to make it really clear that that behavior is legally sanctioned. I was talking earlier about when you shift away from the legally sanctioned behavior to behavior in society more broadly, I think there's a sense of basic decency which can't be legally sanctioned. You can't force people to be nice. You can't force people to have basic decency. That is something that is developed through the ripple effect that everyone contributes to.
And education.
And education is a big part of this. So education in the sense of understanding historical context, understanding the history of peoples, understanding the context of why people of a particular faith have gone through a particular history and the hurt that has caused, having the basic decency to be aware of that and understand that, and having the empathy and the ability to go towards your shared humanity in your dealings with other people, even if you disagree. Look, many people, and Israelis included, they are quite openly criticize their own government. That's you can criticize government all the time and government policy. It's when you're sort of crossing over into attacking someone because they are Jewish or Israeli as an individual, that becomes an unacceptable step because you're basically attacking someone's identity or using your ideological or political differences and expressing them through an attack on someone because of their identity. And that applies when people attacked the Muslim women who were wearing hijabs in Melbourne. They just attacked them because they were wearing a hijab. It was because of their identity.
You've got quite a large remit that covers economic disparities as well, but how far up on the totem pole does racism present in your role right now? How are you triaging this?
There is a lot of work being done on the anti-racism framework by the Human Rights Commission, the Race Discrimination Commissioner. All of that work is important work because it is about tackling what exists, which is the structural racism or the inherent racism, systemic racism might exist in society. And there's a lot of work being done. Obviously, there's been a body of laws and work around race discrimination acts and anti-discrimination acts over a period of time, which have been important in setting the standards of behaviour, legally sanctioning overt racism to someone based on, you know, their ethnicity and their background. Social cohesion does not mean that we all agree. It doesn't mean that we all should just hold hands and sing kumbaya. Cohesion actually means that we're able to navigate our differences peacefully. Obviously, anti-racism is a big part of ensuring that there is a cohesive society.
הקהילה שלכם, השיח שלכם ב-SBS בעברית. רוצים לשמוע עוד סיפורים? האזינו דרך האפל פודקאסט, גוגל פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי, או בכל מקום אחר בו ניתן להאזין לפודקאסטים.